Hi, everybody. Welcome back to season two of Spill the OT Podcast. It has been a hot minute, and for that, I apologize. I think a lot of you weren't sure if I was coming back, and the truth is, I wasn't sure if I was going to come back. This podcast started off as kind of a passion project that I just wanted to get some information out there, and then it kind of turned into a little bit more work than I anticipated. I know that I've told you before, I have like really serious executive functioning things. So this season, we're going to switch things up. For me, I have a really hard time finding the right people to interview and then finding the perfect time for us both to get together and record. It's just been a challenge for me. My schedule's all over the place. I have been working full time and I have actually gone back to grad school. And part of grad school is I have to do some pre-practicum hours. And I'm also starting another podcast. So I just have a pretty full plate right now. And I do want to continue on with this podcast. I want to try and improve and make it better. So I'm starting off a voice recording thing where you can actually send in your own messages. So I have a number that you can call me at, and it's 401-203-3072. And you can call this number. It's a deadline. It's a Google voice number, so it might ring, but it's just going to end up going to voicemail. And if you leave a voicemail, I will share it on the air. So this can be a comment or something funny that happened to you, or maybe it's something upsetting that's bothering you with PDPM or whatever is on your mind and that you'd like to be shared in the podcast. If you leave me a message, I will be sure to include it, even if it's not nice. So if you're going to leave me a mean one, know that I am going to play it on the air. So just want to put that out there because sometimes people send not so nice emails, and I want season two to end that trend. I am only looking for love. So if you have anything nice that you'd like to say, I'm going to share it. But if it's not so nice, I'm going to share it too. So yeah. I also want to conduct my interviews a little bit different. So I think if you're interested in coming on the show, then email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. And then I'm going to send you some questions and then ask that you voice record and send me back your responses. So I have an iPhone, and on my iPhone, it has the voice memo app. You can send up to 30 minutes of content via email really easily. So all you would have to do is record on your own time, answer the questions. You can be as honest or as blunt as you would like to be about answering those questions, and then I'm going to take them and put them into the podcast. I won't do all of my interviews this way. If you really want to talk to me, then that's perfect and we can schedule a time, but I think that this will help me be able to get episodes on here more regularly if I can just pull from content that won't require us to get together each week, because again, I'm not the most organized person and I don't want you as listeners to have to wait just because I'm not organized to get people on here on a regular basis. Okay, so I think that's it for housekeeping. I want to say a huge, huge thank you to everyone who has rated and reviewed this podcast. I've just been so happy and so amazed by all the people who reach out to me via email or on Instagram or by leaving reviews. You guys are just rock stars and it makes me really, really happy. So anyway, it is October 5th. And if you are working in the healthcare part of OT, then you know there have been a lot of big changes that occurred on October 1st. So I do want to hear from anybody who has something specific that they'd like to share about PDPM. I don't know enough about it. I'm kind of out of the healthcare piece of it. I'm in the school systems, so I'm not really being affected by it too much yet. I'm sure at some point it'll trickle down, but right now it's not really impacting me that much, but I know that it's a huge issue that's going on. I have two friends who have actually been let go. They were assistants, but I mean, they're still one of us, and it just was pretty upsetting to hear about their stories. So if you have anything that you would like to say, good or bad, then I would love to hear it. Again, just email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. Okay, and I am so excited to introduce our guest for today. This is Erica Del Pozo. She is an MOT OTRL and she holds a bachelor's in dance and master's in occupational therapy from Nova Southeastern University. Erica has practiced in outpatient pediatrics for 5 years and has also had experience working with older adults with progressive neurological conditions. Erica created a modified dance curriculum for adults with Parkinson's disease in Boca Raton, Florida in 2016. Erica's special interests include work well-being and burnt out prevention in healthcare. She is CEO and founder of the Joy Energy Time, a business dedicated to helping healthcare professionals and organizations address the ongoing challenges of burnout. She is the creator and co-host of the Burnt Out to Lit Up podcast, which is a holistic wellness show for healthcare professionals. And Erica has served as an adjunct professor at Nova Southeastern University for 3 semesters and collaborating with Dr. Lamden Padavina to teach occupational analysis and human interactions. Erica has worked with several distinguished continuing education agencies, creating short and long evidence-based courses around holistic and multi-level approaches to address burnout and mental health in the healthcare. Long story short, I love my conversation with Erica because I've been feeling burned out. As you know, if you've listened to any episodes before, I was also feeling kind of burnt out by this podcast. I think this interview with Erica took place either the end of May or the beginning of June. It was a while ago, and I just have been feeling so burned out between school, going back to school, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I also turned 30, which just made me had like a whole what am I going to do with my life moment. And it was just a lot of things at once. And honestly, the podcast was burning me out too, because I felt like I had to keep pushing out content and I just was feeling overloaded and stressed out. And it was just a whole lot. So my conversation with her was really timely. And then it kind of gave me the power and the confidence to just say, I need a break. So I probably should have told you guys that I was taking a break, but I did not. So all of that is to say, my conversation with Erica was just really awesome, and she just really makes burnout feel like it's not your fault. I think that there's a lot of guilt and shame about burnout. Like, is it me that's not strong enough, or did I pick the wrong career? Or I think that there are just a lot of layers to it and what causes it. And she just puts it in terms that I think are so important for us to acknowledge. And I just hope that you enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with her. All right, here we go.
So my name is Erica Del Pozo. I'm from Miami, Florida. And I, like many people, had no idea what occupational therapy was growing up. I knew I wanted to do something in the medical world. Like, I was interested in becoming a physician and I was interested in medicine from a really young age. And when I was an undergrad, I had danced my whole life, but when I was an undergrad, I took it to another level. I decided to major in dance, and something overtook me, which I still can't really quite explain why I became so obsessed with dance and I wanted to become a dancer. But then after a few injuries in the middle of my undergrad career, I was getting freaked out because I was like, what am I gonna really do once I graduate? Like, and I had a few injuries, I had a few broken bones. Like, they were stress fractures. So I was completely overworking myself and killing myself to like get to this goal of becoming a dancer. And then halfway through undergrad, a friend of a friend told me about occupational therapy. And it seemed like just like the perfect solution for me, because it was that science that and that medical world that I love so much, but it was also the creativity. And I got to shadow, especially in pediatrics. I thought that was so much fun. So that's where all my shadowing took place. And then I got into the occupational therapy program at Nova Southeastern University right after my undergrad. And I felt relieved that I found a career that felt stable and secure, but a career that really inspired me to work with people and actually use some of my dance techniques, which I actually have, to combine my love for dance with therapy and to have this awesome career. So that's kind of like where I got started.
That's awesome. So how many years did it take you total to get your degree?
6.
Okay. So can you talk to us about burnout?
Yeah. So I didn't really know what this was until I experienced it myself. And this was something that I didn't know. Like, I had heard of it and I had heard of like, you know, burnout and stress, but I hadn't really I didn't really know what to call what I was going through. And I just went through everything during the first few years of my career. When I first started out, I had an amazing job with amazing support systems, but I didn't know how to use my voice. I've always been more shy, and I've always been more reluctant to voice any concerns or something's bothering me to stand up for myself. So I never stood my ground. And what happened was that I started to get more and more work. My caseload started to grow, and my evaluations and re-evaluations were literally consuming all moments of my day, all moments of my night, basically my whole weekend, all this paperwork. And I have a little breakdown in the middle of the day. And because I was just kind of denying how I was feeling about all this work, and I had nothing else to compare this to, I thought this was normal. I just thought, this is how my career is going to go. This is what is expected of me. And so I had a little breakdown in the middle of the workday. And like I said, because it was such an amazing first job, they were able to help me out and meet me in the middle and reduce some of my workload. And I adjusted my schedule. But unfortunately, the burnout persisted in different ways. I was in another job now because I had moved. And so this is like a month or a year later after this first incident, probably like over a year. And I'm in another job and totally different setting, but then different things started to happen. And I'm so thankful for that first job because they prepared me with like, okay, this is like, if you have a problem, you know, you should be able to speak to your manager or supervisor and they should be able to help you. But in the second instance, I learned that so many other factors were just coming at me. It's like every day I didn't know what I was going to get. I felt like I was completely out of control of everything. And this is when I really started to pay attention to what burnout is and how it's impacting me. After I left that job, I began interested in, okay, what exactly is burnout? Because these experiences that happened to me, I felt like, although they felt so unique to me, I know I wasn't alone. And I became fascinated with researching burnout. And that led me to this path of where I am today, where it's been a really windy path, a lot of like ups and downs, a lot of turns and curves. But I have researched burnout. I've created multiple continuing educational courses around this topic and have worked with big agencies and small agencies to get this information out there to clinicians. And I feel like this is just the beginning for me.
What settings were you working when you had your first job and then your second job?
So the first job was outpatient pediatrics. And then the second job was also outpatient, but it was mostly neurological conditions, like plenty of Parkinson's, stroke, MS, but it was older adults.
Okay. So you've had some time to kind of think about burnout, obviously. Can you pinpoint exactly what it was that like caused it for you?
Yeah. So looking back and in retrospect, that first time that it occurred to me, it was what I perceived as a lack of autonomy. So burnout, you can break it down into three basic components. It's increased emotional exhaustion, increased cynicism, and decreased self-efficacy. So not just are you exhausted beyond belief, but it's exhaustion that is combined with like this detachment from work. Like you are detached from your job, you're detached from your even career or profession. And then you also feel poorly about your efforts, your self-efficacy, your contributions to your work. So it's kind of like all those three things that make this so unique. And in that, you know, so that first setting was the autonomy. And then in the second setting, it was a combination of everything. It was a workload and caseload that was attached to the autonomy because there were things happening that weren't in my control with my caseload and schedule that were significantly impacting like my mental health. And then it was this lack of, or this unfairness. I noticed there was some favoritism, unfairness, lack of community, because I would go to work and I knew who I could trust, who I couldn't trust. And there was a lot of internal politics, a lot of kind of this internalized aggression. And so it was a dynamic, corrosive environment to work in. Dynamic, not in a good way, just very unsteady. The energy sometimes, I didn't know what to expect. Sometimes I felt like it kind of goes back to autonomy, just out of control of my day, out of control with my schedule. And then the rewards, because on paper, that was the highest paying salary I've ever received in an outpatient job. On paper, that looks great, but it was other rewards that were missing for me, like the social emotional awards, like being appreciated, feeling seen and feeling heard. I did not feel like I was being appreciated in that way. I felt like I'm just a warm body in this clinic and I'm expected to do what is given to me. And if I were to question it, it looks very bad and I'm outed and I'm the black sheep. And it was kind of like all these different factors combined in this corrosive environment that led to this exhaustion, that led to this detached view from work, and then that led to me questioning my abilities.
Yeah, I hear you so bad, because I never thought about like the three different categories, but it's almost like the five stages of denial. Like, mm-hmm. I've had all three of those come, and like I do think they build on each other, because my first job, I remember, like, it was a good experience. I had coworkers who were my age, fresh out of college. So it was like a fun younger group to work with. But just the caseload, the productivity, the expectation that you would work 6 days a week. We had to be there over the weekends. It was just the culture of the work environment. Oh, if you're not going to work on Saturday, then I'll have to work. And you felt guilty to go in. So I think starting there, and I only worked there maybe 6 months or so. And then I feel like I'm even burnt out from job switching, because I've switched jobs and I've switched settings so many times, chasing for a better situation. But I think that in itself is causing burnout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there's other factors that go into that. And if you're switching settings and you feel like maybe you haven't found that job that provides all those things for you, that really lifts you and supports you and makes you feeling like you're a part of this community, you're proud of working in this establishment, you want to come back to it. And there definitely is exhaustion switching jobs. So I can relate to that.
Like, would you mind talking about, I know you said that you've like struggled with depression before. I feel like so many people too. Can you touch on that at all? Would you feel comfortable?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like, this is the thing about burnout that I like to make a note of and be careful about. A lot of the research out there, and it all points back to an organization like creates conditions that don't support workers, and therefore burnout is a byproduct of that. And I would like to note that I like, when I talk about burnout, I understand that it is not the individual's fault. It is not a weakness of the individual. But with that being said, I experienced burnout, but I also have a history of anxiety and depression. So, all those things can kind of fuse together and they can exacerbate the other. So experiencing burnout with the anxiety I had, it just made things 10 times worse. And how I handle anxiety is I have a lot of somatic symptoms that cause me a lot of discomfort and embarrassment, because if I'm experiencing anxiety in the middle of a work day, and my sympathetic nervous system is going haywire, then I have left my patient with another therapist because I had to like go and throw up. And it makes, like, I wish I could tell you why that is, but I just know that, like, I can't breathe. I have a million thoughts in my mind. I have shortness of breath. And this is like my sympathetic nervous system, I feel like, trying to do something. And it's like, it's something that I've had to deal with for years. And growing up, I started seeing a therapist in high school for my depression and anxiety. And that started in high school. And as I went through the different stages in my life, college and undergrad, and even working as an OT, I have been through different types of therapies. I've been on anxiety medication. And I went to my doctor during this burnout. I didn't know quite what to call it. I didn't know what, like, how to express myself with that. I just knew that I had a lot of anxiety, and I didn't know, like, again, I put a lot of that blame on myself. So my doctor put me on anxiety medication. And during that experience, I can look back and I can assess that, like, the medicine helped me with my somatic, my physical symptoms, but I was in a situation where I still didn't know how to advocate, and I was so stressed that it was impacting my sleep. And everything is just so integrated. Like, I can't really tease out, like, what came first, you know, but I know that burnout did exacerbate my anxiety, because it affected, like, every part of me, even while I was away from work. So it's really hard going through that. And I would advise, if anyone that is listening is experiencing burnout, like you have identified that, you know, your work for whatever reason is not supporting you, or you're not in a supportive environment, but you also have, like, these other symptoms from anxiety and depression, there's no right answer. Medication, therapy, I would advise you to seek the help that you need, because that medicine was helpful for me at the time, but I could have also used at the time, even though I did go through therapy, I don't think I was in therapy during that particular time of burnout. So I felt like I was just kind of, like, dealing with things on my own. And the best thing I knew how to do was just not stand up for myself. So I wish I would have, you know, looking back, I wish I would have learned some of the things I know now. But that's the whole, you know, process of learning and growing, and, you know, now I know better.
Wow. How did you navigate that with your boss? Like, if there was a situation where you knew that you were physically going to be sick, did you talk to them about that, or did you keep it kind of private?
So my coworkers knew, and the coworkers that I trusted that knew me very well, if I was showing signs of, like, high levels of stress, if I was showing in my face and my body, I got kind of quiet and serious, my coworkers would understand if I needed to excuse myself, or if I needed to wait a few minutes before I got my next patient. Like, my coworkers were there to help me out, but I was embarrassed to tell my bosses about that. And it was something that I couldn't predict when it would happen. And I even had little alcohol wipes in my pocket. And if I felt nauseous, I would just, like, sniff it for a second, and it would help me, like, come, it would take away, like, the nauseousness. But it was just, like, something that I was ashamed of, that I felt like it was all my fault. You know, I had all this workload, I had a huge caseload, huge workload, and all these other things going on. And I felt weak because I couldn't handle it. And my body was taking it out in this way. And I didn't, like, tell my boss that, but my coworkers, the ones that were supportive of me, did help. And I think that having that community and people that understand at work really truly makes a difference.
Definitely. I actually struggle. It kind of ebbs and flows, but with anxiety and depression as well, it presents a little bit differently for me, but I totally relate to just, like, you don't know who you can really trust with that information, because you don't ever want it to be used against you in a way. So I hear you on that. It's a tricky thing to navigate.
Yeah, I think a lot of the studies show that having work BFFs and having, well, so a lot of the studies don't say that, but having people at work that you can trust, having friendships at work that can be used in a positive way versus, for example, like, you can have friendships at work that are based around a lot of negativity and a lot of venting and a lot of, you know, siding up against, creating sides against each other. And I mean, those type of friendships, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about friendships that are positive, where you can find support, where if you have a problem, you can tell them in confidence and they can help you, or you can help them problem solve, support one another. And ideally, the optimal work environment would be that the leader, the manager, whoever your superior is, does lead you more than just telling you what to do. You want to be able to come to them with a problem and work through it together, ideally.
Hey everybody, I am so genuinely excited to tell you about MedBridge. So MedBridge is a continuing ed site and they have tons of continuing ed courses all available online. You can stream them at your own pace. They also have home exercise plans, which are incredible. You can literally build your own plan with pictures that can perfectly suit whatever client you're working for. It's honestly so awesome. And you get unlimited CEUs. And these CEU courses are just really intriguing and exciting. Like, I've done continuing ed online in the past, and these ones that they select are just very much in line with what I find interesting, and I feel like you might find them interesting as well. So, are you struggling with finding the resources for your time for CEUs? With almost 2,000 accredited evidence-based streaming courses, live CEU webinars, MedBridge is your all-in-one solution. And actually, if you use my code, it's spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT. So spill the OT, one word, capital S, capital T, capital OT. You can get $175 off of your year-long subscription, which is awesome. I mean, that's like significant amount of money off. So if you are interested, please go check it out. Again, use the code spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT, all one word. All right. I really hope that you go check it out. Enjoy.
So that's what you're kind of looking for in a workplace is, can I trust the people I work with? Are my needs being met in the sense that, like, I have support? If I'm having a bad day, is someone going to use that information against me, or are they going to be there for me?
I'm so glad you brought up the point about friends that are based on more like loving rather than like, because it's taking the easy road by kind of creating that like enemy. Like, say you have a terrible boss. It's really easy for you and a coworker to kind of gain up and be like, oh, the boss is the worst. She does this, this, and this. But that's not building a true relationship. That's just kind of having a common enemy. So I'm really glad that you kind of distinguish between like a healthy relationship at work and a non-healthy, because I do feel I've worked in quite a few facilities, and I'd say in well more than half, there is kind of like a negative undertone in a lot of these facilities, but it could be because everybody else is feeling that same burnout and they just don't know how to express it, or they might not even be able to identify it.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of organizations, and this is in my experience in that place where I worked, where I did experience the most and the most severe burnout, is that some organizations get stuck in certain traps. And if you've been somewhere for a really long time, then you might not see that your organization is stuck in a trap, because that becomes your new normal. So I walked into a setting where screaming across the therapy room is normal. Certain things you walk into like what you experience in an interview can look completely different than what the actual setting, like a normal workday, looks like. So it's important that you, if you're in a job interview, that you ask if you can shadow or talk to another employee without the presence of the employer involved, if you like get to just like see how the facility runs and operates. Because if there are a lot of those internal politics, and I've heard some crazy stories, and I experienced it myself. If you see those internal politics where some people don't talk to other people, and there's this like lack of unity, and there's this, you know, like eye for eye sort of mentality, those are red flags. Like, you might not be able to do your best work there. You might not be able to thrive there. And, you know, it's tricky because other things can look alluring or appealing to you. Like I said, a high pay may be compensating for the fact that they have a high turnover and they're trying to keep you interested and invested. But if other things are falling apart at the seams, then what good is it if you can't sleep at night and have all these problems and challenges at work? It's about weighing the pros and cons, but this is something that you may not know at the beginning of a job. So again, don't be hard on yourself, because I didn't know this. I definitely ignore the red flags, and I wanted to be a team player. I wanted to be, the good therapist, but you start to learn these red flags, observe them, and trust your gut. I would just say trust your gut.
I'm so glad you brought up the shadowing thing. I think that's so important, because like you said, the interview might be like, some of them are 20 minutes long and you just don't get to see what it's actually going to be like. Can you share for people who might be like, okay, you're using the word burnout a lot, what does burnout actually like mean to you?
Yeah. So burnout has, like I mentioned earlier, those three components, but what that means is that it's specific to work, right? Because if I say, I have a huge test coming up, or, my coworker is out of town, so I'm covering her caseload for a week, and you're using the word, I'm so burned out, that you're using the term incorrectly. According to its meaning, it's these three components: the exhaustion, the cynicism, and the self-efficacy all tied together. So not just if you're just like exhausted and you're just tired, but you felt confident in your skills and your ability to do your work, and you felt still that passion and that energy for your work, you could just say you're exhausted, because that's completely fine for you to say. But burnout is a lot more of a heavier term, and I think it's just been misused so much, and it's been used interchangeably for stressed. Because you can be really stressed studying for a test. You can be really stressed covering your coworker's caseload for a week. But if conditions return back to normal, you know, when that coworker comes back from work, or once that test is done, if, you know, those conditions go back to normal, then burnout wouldn't have had the chance to develop. Because burnout really, like, what really, really, when you really start to cross that threshold into burnout, it's when you have the acute fatigue, but then it develops into a chronic fatigue. And usually that fatigue is the first sign, and those two other components accompany it, you know, the cynicism and decreased self-efficacy. Those kind of like tag along. Usually the exhaustion is the pivotal point, and you have a lack of opportunities for recovery. So what I mean by that is recovery can happen during work, and it happens outside of work, and even during sleep. So when I was burned out, I would go to work, of course, and on top of my anxiety, I felt like I was turned on like the entire day, and even like probably the entire night. Like, my sympathetic system was always, always on. I woke up stressed. I woke up anticipating my problems at work, and I would wake up extra early and get to work early so I could just sit in my car for a little bit. Because I felt like, because my days were so out of control, getting to work early was like my way of controlling things. And so again, like worrying, I could barely like eat. And then, you know, during the day, any recovery time during the day essentially was like during lunch. But I made the mistake once of eating lunch at my desk once, and then I was forced to do an evaluation during my lunchtime. So I learned that at 11:59, I have to leave the door, like physically leave the building, and come back at like 12:59. And that was, in my instance, like, that's what I had to do. But during that lunchtime, I was counting down the minutes of like, oh my God, I have to go back. And then I would leave work and work out, but I would do like high intensity workouts, or I also did workouts in the morning at my other job. So I would wake up like at 5 a.m. and try to do a high intensity workout. And for someone that has a ton of anxiety and was experiencing burnout, I like that wasn't a good mix for me because, again, my sympathetic nervous system was like on. I'm always, everything is like a threat to me. I was stressed out about everything. So usually my workouts were just more stress provoking. And then I would go home, cook and like watch TV and know in my head, okay, I have 2 more hours, then I have to go to sleep and like work is coming. And then like I would go to sleep with all this pain in my shoulders. I had so much pain in my shoulders and I couldn't like fall asleep. I had trouble staying asleep. I would dream about work. I would dream about treating patients. And then when Friday night came, I just couldn't be like happier. I just wanted to press pause, keep Friday night going on forever. This was the height of it all, just like the height of the worst of the worst. And there was a lot of crying. There was a lot of, like numbness in me. So that was what burnout was for me in my experience. And that's how, you know, getting to those points, it just became normal. Like I said, it became like sort of like my normal. I had nothing else to really compare this to. So look back now, I'm grateful that I went through that actually, because it has allowed me to see how strong I was in going forward and trying to make change, trying to stand up for myself eventually. But it was definitely hard. And yeah, it's just really hard for me.
So after you were able to identify what was going on, can you kind of walk us through what you did after that? How did you get out of it, or how did you find coping skills to help? And just where are you now in your process?
Yeah, so during that time in that job where things were upside down for me, I started to feel so uncomfortable about the current situation that I tried to I attempted to stand up for myself. Like I had meetings with my supervisor and with the owner of the clinic. And I told them, I don't feel comfortable doing X, Y, Z. You know, I don't feel comfortable treating patients without a prescription, like things that were unethical and fraudulent. And I felt like it was so uncomfortable for me. And my ethics was telling me, like my heart was telling me, like, I can't do this. Like I have to stand up for myself. And so like, it took a lot of courage for me. I thought maybe, you know, things would change, but unfortunately that advocacy, those attempts to like express myself did backfire. We had meetings where we had big team meetings where I was being talked about, but my name wasn't being said. And I knew that this attention was being brought on me, how there's someone in the room that's not a team player, how we should all be on the same team, and all these things that were being used against me. And so in my heart, I knew that I wouldn't last year long. And so I made sure I had another job lined up, and then I gave a 2 weeks notice and I left. And that experience at that job was quite traumatic for me. And so looking back, you know, when I got another job and when things just got so much better, because then I was in an environment where I felt comfortable, safe, supported. And then I also began adjuncting. I became an adjunct professor. So I was balancing being an adjunct for one of the classes in the OT program in Florida, and then also balancing like per diem back in pediatrics, where I felt like it was my favorite setting. And so slowly but surely, again, I didn't have a manual at the time to tell me you were burned out and this is what you need to do. But I started to explore things. So I began exploring meditation. I just started with healing myself first. And so like I began with meditation. I used the Headspace app. I'm obsessed with it. I still use it. And never would have thought I'd be like a meditator, but I use meditation every single day. And it's one of my favorite tools because I can see how 15-minute meditation has impacted the rest of my life in such positive ways. I've become just more in control of, not control, but I've just gained more awareness and more consciousness about like who I am, how I show up. It has just made me a better person. So I started there, and I just started slowly but surely getting, like, started listening to a ton of podcasts, reading books on what you would find in the self-help section, but it's all this personal development, personal growth that I think has shifted from, like, our idea of, like, what self-help is into, like, at least for me, became something that we all need. Like, reading my favorite book is You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero, and that book really helped me to realize that I am, like, I am powerful, I am wonderful, and I started to just really take care of my soul and my mind with these books and podcasts, meditating, and then I became passionate for the advocacy of burnout.
Can you share, like, what type of OT are you doing now? You might have just said that, but I just want to make sure I understand it.
Oh, okay. So actually what I'm doing right now is unconventional, and it's not like, I'm not in a traditional OT setting. I founded Joy Energy Time in 2017. And so it's an LLC. And basically what I've been doing for the past few months, my husband and I moved. And so when we moved, because he's a physical therapist, so he's doing travel therapy. And when we moved and we left our home, I saw this as an opportunity to just explore Joy Energy Time. And so I'm not employed by anyone now. I so far for the past few months, I've been a contractor for creating these courses about burnout for some agencies like occupationaltherapy.com and some other like mom and pop agencies for like courses around burnout. And then that's what I've been doing. And I presented this year at AOTA and the Occupational Therapy Association of California. I presented my courses on burnout. So I'm just doing my own thing right now. And with Joy Energy Time, my biggest thing is creating a brand that is like a community for healthcare professionals, for healthcare organizations to find resources on wellness and how we can be advocates for shaping a better healthcare system. So I am totally figuring out everything by myself, and this is, like, you know, pretty messy for me, but I'm very driven to create something that can impact people so they don't have to experience what I experienced. And I'm drawn to this idea of creating something, but it's not for everyone. And I've spoken to so many OTs and PTs that love, you know, love patient care, love clinical care, and they don't have a desire to leave. But unfortunately, the types of settings we're working in, the types of companies we're working for, sometimes just see us as a number. And that's the thing that, like, is, it makes me so sad, because we enter healthcare because we have this compassion for helping others. And we have this, like, romanticized view of what it is to be in healthcare. But once we get into healthcare and we have these productivity numbers we have to hit, and we're in meetings with our supervisors because we haven't hit these numbers or whatever it may be, dealt with the real world. For so many people, that takes away from why we entered healthcare. And you have all these other burdensome tasks that fall on you that may be outside of your expectations, but you start to take on things that maybe weren't a part of the job when you signed up for. And it's important that get clear with, try to tease out the things, like, that are and aren't working for you. Like, think about, you know, is this the right setting for me? Do I like working in pediatrics, or do I like working in acute care? Like, I think getting down to, like, okay, the setting, is this setting for me? Do I enjoy working with these clients? And then, you know, thinking about the company, does this company have my best interests in mind? Do they care about me as the person, or do they just care about me as a number? How am I treated? How am I being listened to? Am I being heard? So I think I have a guide, not even a guide. It's a sheet, just one sheet with 12 factors, 12 questions you can ask yourself. And it's kind of broken down into basic needs, individual needs, growth needs, teamwork needs. So you can determine, okay, are my needs being met? And you're going to probably look at this and you may think, oh, I didn't even know this was important, but it is. So I'll leave that link, you know, put your email in, and then that sheet will be sent to your email. So it's a really quick way to just assess, okay, like, am I being taken care of?
That's perfect. Yeah, because I think there's just so many pieces at play. And you're never going to have a perfect situation, right? That's life. We do the best that we can. But if you can prioritize what matters the most and then see if you're able to get those to work for you and not against you. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I think a lot of people, including myself, will find that helpful.
Thank you for having me on. And I'm happy to share that, that resource. I have other free like sheets or guides on my website as well that kind of cover all these different aspects that we've been talking about. Like, I have an emotional wellness toolkit that's how to enhance your emotional wellness, and then also what else the needs cheat sheet I was just telling you about, and then I can't think of it now, but I have a few more resources, and they're all in one place on my website, so it's easy to find.
Can you tell us about your podcast and what you do over there?
Sure. So I have the Burnt Out to Lit Up podcast, and I can't take credit for the name. My husband thought of the name. But I co-host it with my husband. Like I mentioned, he's a physical therapist. But I make it a point to interview people that are in healthcare, that aren't in healthcare, anything. But my mission in interviewing all these different people is to deliver holistic wellness for you. Because I had to listen to a ton of different podcasts to get more in touch with my spirituality, to learn more about advocacy in healthcare, or to learn about like all these different things. So, you know, holistic wellness is huge. There's so many different dimensions of wellness. You have occupational wellness, and environmental wellness, financial wellness, you have emotional wellness. So it's like, I try to bring experts from all these different places, whether they're in healthcare or not, to just bring good content, to my audience.
Awesome. And, where can people find you?
So you can go to joyenergytime.com. That's like the mother website, 'cause you'll find everything there. You'll find the resources that I was mentioning. But I'll leave the link for that sheet with you so they can access that that sheet right away. But if you go to joyenergytime.com, you'll see how you can find us, our podcast. We have a newsletter. And you can also search Burnt Out to Lit Up Podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on anywhere you listen to podcasts. Burnt Out to Lit Up is there. So, yeah.
Awesome. So, before you go, I like to ask everybody this. If you could talk to your 18-year-old self, would you send Erica to OT school?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes. Yes. I love the profession. I know there's a lot of room for growth, and I am proud to be an OT. I think we're one of the most versatile professions there is. I just think we need to do a better job of not pigeonholing ourselves. And I think that we make that change. You know, if we create that demand and we create those businesses and we create other things outside of the traditional that we're kind of pigeonholed into, I think we can really like flourish as a profession and keep gaining that recognition and that respect in the world. So, you know, it takes creative OTs, it takes brave OTs to, get out there. It's not easy. But we chose this amazing profession that we could do so much with. So yes, I'm proud to be an OT.
Awesome. awesome. I'm really glad you said that because we're in a couple of Facebook groups together, but one of them is for alternative careers where you can kind of use your OTPT or SLP degree, and people just give conversation to what they're doing. And I feel like in school, we learned about a lot of alternative careers that you could do with OT, like Reiki or a community mental health OT. And for a long time, I've kind of been complaining and being like, well, where are these jobs? I don't see these jobs anywhere. I look on Indeed, it's skilled nursing facility, it's outpatient peds, it's acute inpatient rehab. So where are these jobs? But I think you're absolutely right. We kind of need to take ownership. And if we have that spark in ourselves, like we have the opportunity to create it. I know that it's not for everybody, but I think if somebody's listening and they feel really passionate about a certain area and they know that OTs can help, then it is worth being brave and just at least putting that out into the universe and seeing what comes back at you.
Exactly. You know, a final note I would like to make on that is we go to school and we learn how to become good employees. And this is something that, like, just being an entrepreneur, I've really like thought about because no one taught me or encouraged me to take these risks. But yes, if there's something you want to do and you don't see it, go out there and create it. Thanks again for having me. This was a great conversation. I'm usually the one interviewing people, so it felt good to just be interviewed and share like these other parts of my story that I know are really helpful for people. So thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. I know that your time is very valuable, so I and everybody else really appreciates it.
All right, everybody. I hope that you enjoyed that interview. Don't you just love her? I just feel like she's amazing, and I could listen to her talk forever, which is very good because she has her own podcast, so make sure that you check it out. And if you are new to this channel, make sure you check out season one. And if you are a long-term subscriber, then I'm sorry that I disappeared, but I'm back. I'm going to try and release an episode every week, and I would love for you to be a part of it. So if you are interested, then email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. Make sure you check out my Instagram at spill_the_OT. And as always, if you can rate and review this podcast, that would be awesome. And I hope you guys have a great week. Bye.